Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, or healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. For today's episode, we spoke with Eli Bibout, a Republican senator from Wyoming who faced two cancer battles. Hear what he did to stay motivated and how his health issues influenced his politics.
Can you tell me a little bit about the time leading up to your cancer diagnosis, and how did you ultimately find out that you had cancer?
The first cancer, which was the esophageal cancer, my family had had a history of colon cancer, and I had lost two uncles and a cousin, and my grandpa had, had some, so I was very aware of the colon cancer, and I had talked to my local doctor. I'm in a small community in Wyoming called Riverton. Mm-hmm. We had really good doctors, and he suggested he had lost his sister to colon cancer, knowing about my uncles that I should have a colonoscopy. Mm-hmm. So I started doing that, and I had several of those, and of course had polyps, and I believe that if you have a polyp at a young age, you don't do anything, ultimately it becomes malignant, and you have the adenocarcinoma. But one of my, like my second or third test for the colon, my doctor, Dr. Schlicht, S-C-H-L-I-D-T, mm-hmm. who's become a very close personal friend, said, Eli, you ought to do an endoscopy. And you know, early on in my life, I'd had some issues with GERD and reflux, and of course they had the medication to mask the disease, but never really did anything about treatment, so I was pretty naive about it. I said, sure.
Right.
And so he went and did the endoscopy, and I'll never forget, I'm a politician,
right.
And I was back at the White House going to see Vice President Cheney, who's a friend of mine, mm-hmm. at the White House, and my doctor called and said, by the way, not good news, you have an adenocarcinoma, esophageal cancer, and that's when I first learned about it. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, it was atypical, had no indication, you know, typically what happens with esophageal cancer, why the survival rate is so low is people don't find out about it until they have trouble swallowing, and then the tumor spread and it's metastasized, and it's pretty much a real tough deal at that point. So we caught it early.
Right.
And it was like stage 1-2A or something like that. It had not got outside the esophagus, so it had not metastasized. We thought a couple of the lymph nodes may have some issues, but essentially we thought it was contained in the esophagus.
Okay, so you mentioned that you had some family history of cancer. Do you have a genetic mutation that predisposed you to this, or was your family history of colon cancer separate for your diagnosis of esophageal cancer?
Separate. It was separate. I just went in for the diagnostic testing to be preventative.
Right.
And then because of that, they found the esophageal.
And what year was this?
2003. And I had just, here's an interesting thing about it too. I'd ran a very close tie race for governor of Wyoming and lost by a few thousand votes. It was extremely close. Mm-hmm. One of the closest ever, and so if I'd have been elected governor, probably would not have had the test. I'd have been so busy doing what I was doing, might not have had the test, and then, of course, I might have found out about it too late. But we were able to, we didn't win the election, and then I said I went ahead and did these tests, and that's when we discovered it.
So you were still working in politics when you were diagnosed. So did kind of being in the public eye and being a governmental figure affect your cancer journey at all?
Well, at that particular time, I had served in the legislature for 12 years, and I was Speaker of the House, mm-hmm. and I had stepped down to run for governor.
Okay.
So technically, I wasn't in politics. And then, the disease was diagnosed, and I went to the treatments and all the surgery and everything. I was not actively involved in politics, but clearly, when you're, you know, a publicly elected official, that it's, you know, it's out there in the media, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in my second cancer. But the interesting thing that, you know, when you're diagnosed, and I remember that phone call that you have cancer, and of course I didn't know anything about survival rates, the complexity of it, the severity, any of that, but your first thing you say, oh my goodness, why me? And mm-hmm. and that lasted, for me, it lasted about 5 seconds. And then I said, now what do I got to do to be proactive and take this on and not end up like my uncles that we buried, you know, in a short period of time in a very, very tragic death, and you know, like a cancer death is. So immediately I decided that we're going to do all we can and learn about this, mm-hmm. get the best treatment possible, and try to take care of it and look for a cure. And that was an interesting process I went through after I read about it. And it turns out that one of our sitting senators, Senator John Barrasso, he's one of the leading Republicans in the U.S. Senate. He's a doctor and a friend of mine from Wyoming. And we talked about it, and so I decided to get several opinions. And every time I went to a different area, I started out in Salt Lake, and they didn't have Anschutz then, but I started in Salt Lake, then went to Denver for the, Salt Lake with Huntsman, Denver for the Anschutz, and out to the University of Washington. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately went to MD Anderson, and along that journey, every time I went someplace, I learned more and more. And when I got to MD Anderson, it was very clear that Dr. Roth, who was the head of the vascular surgery and the gastroenterologist there, was where I decided to go for my treatment and my surgery.
Okay, so you were traveling to Texas?
Yep.
Wow. And then you mentioned that you had a second cancer. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, the first cancer, we did the esophagectomy and the healing process and all that, and all those survivors and people that have gone through esophageal cancer and the surgery know what it's like, and we won't dwell on that point, but it was an interesting time for me, and it lasted, you know, there's long-term lasting effects because of it,
right.
And all of us deal with that every day, but after about 3 or 4 or 5 years of kind of getting through that, the Senate seat that in my district, the gentleman that had that had passed away while in the Senate. And so a lot of people wanted me to apply to be appointed to fill that position out. So I said, okay, I was feeling decent enough to do it. So I was appointed to be in the Wyoming Senate mm-hmm. in 2007. And then I was going through that process. And then here 3 years ago, I was in the leadership. And I had gone fishing. This is an interesting story with my other senator from Washington, Mike Enzi. And we had been fishing, and we caught some little brookie trout in Wyoming, and we took them home. My wife cooked them, and I had a bone in my throat. And I tried all the conventional things at home you do, peanut butter, bananas. And I was so worried about the esophageal, I called my doctor, Cloud and Casper mm-hmm. and said, you know, what am I going to do? He said, well, if it doesn't go away in the morning, Eli, fly to Casper. I'll pick you up and we'll take you in and I'll do a scope on you and we'll take care of it. So I said, sure. It wasn't there the next day. So I go to Casper. He picks me up at the airport. We go to the hospital and I wake up and there's another gentleman in the room and he said, we got some not so good news. You've got a malignant tumor, it looks like, on your tongue, stage 4 throat cancer. And so that was my second primary cancer. And there again, all of the above, cancer, how do you deal with it? And ultimately went to MD Anderson, mm-hmm. but because of convenience and travel, I ended up at Huntsman and went through the, you know, all the radiation, chemo, and all that, and was able to stay in the Senate, didn't resign, mm-hmm. and kind of got through it, and then became president of the Senate, of which I still am, and still dealing with the checkups and all of that. But I think I'm well on the way to recovery, and I'm cancer free at this point from both esophageal and stage 4 throat cancer.
Great. Well, happy to hear that. You have this high ranking governmental position, and now you have, you know, a late stage cancer diagnosis. What was that like for you? And now you are kind of in the spotlight.
It was an interesting time. There were rumors about going out around. Of course, most people in my state of Wyoming were aware of my first cancer, and you know, it was like a recurrence. It had came back, and so there was all kinds of rumors and. Mm-hmm. About the severity of it. So what I decided to do is I went public and made a release and just told them the facts that it was stage 4 throat cancer, and we thought we were the best treatment we could get at Huntsman. And my doctors over there were Dr. Hunt and Dr. Hitchcock, and the protocol and the treatment was what I thought was the best we could do for the type of cancer I had. So we went public with it. And mm-hmm. short of everybody, we didn't do the, you know, they've got those social media things that you put in, you write in every day. I forget what it's called. We didn't do that, but we made several press releases and you know, would I resign and all of that. And what happened was the cancer was diagnosed in June, mm-hmm. and the treatments were in August and September and into October. And so I was, it was, you know, chemo and radiation isn't a lot of fun.
Right.
And I was able to go through that and felt I was healed up enough to go to back to the session and serve for the next general session. And with a lot of help from fellow senators, and we got through it and did it. And then I started on the cure and mending up. And then that fall, I was elected to be president of the Senate. And everybody understood that I had the second primary cancer and was well on the way to recovery and was able to fulfill my duties as a publicly elected official.
And what was your driving force behind all of this to motivate you to go through treatments, you know, be a senator and just keep on pushing forward?
There's a lot of mentors out there that I really admire and respect that have stepped up to do public service with a lot of adverse family and physical conditions. And you know, I won't go into a lot of them, but they're out there, and you're very familiar with them. So public service is a wonderful thing, and it's something I totally believe in, and I just have a strong desire to give back to the state that's been so generous to me. Mm-hmm. That was a driving factor. Just the family and they're willing to live and continue to be a father, a grand. At the particular time of my first cancer, I had no grandchildren, and the thought of not being able to be a grandpa, you know, that's something everybody would like to do, is be, at least from my perspective, would look forward to be a grandparent. And mm-hmm. so that was able to be accomplished, that desire just to live and take on a disease. And then the other thing is to, the Lord has blessed in a lot of ways to be able to be here. And after all of this, and like with you, share my stories and let people know that are going through these, you know, cancer. We all know what it's like, the shock, and all of that, to say, you know, there's a lot of good news and good things that happen out there, and people do continue with their life and get back to normal the best they can, and we're able to be functioning parents, grandparents, public servants, work in the profession, you know, the professional athletes, the quarterback for the Buffalo Bills, Jim Kelly, I think,
right,
is going through throat cancer, and I'm trying to reach out to him and say, I understand, and I think he's had a recurrence, you know, just, and I want to reach out to him. I haven't been able to get through to him. And then another sports figure, he played for the Phillies. He's a third baseman with melanoma. Mm-hmm. And some of those type of people out there, and some of the, just, you know, John McCain going through what he's going through, and Ted Kennedy with his glioblastoma, and all the publicly elected officials, nobody knows, or cancer doesn't know whether you're a senator, whatever race, creed, or religion, or whatever, nobody knows where it's going to strike, and so we're all in this game together, and we all, so I just respect people that stand up, and regardless of where you are in public life, or personal life, or professional life, the battles you take on, and it's just that tremendous respect for people that fight those fights, and having been able to do it and survive, I just have a real relationship with them, knowing, and you know, I tell everybody we're members of that club. We never wanted to be, but we're glad they're there, and that's cancer survivor.
Right. Has your experience with cancer affected your politics in any way? I saw that you are pushing for legislation regarding opioid addiction. And are there any other kind of health aspects that came into your life as a senator that happened or corresponded with your cancer?
Absolutely. And early on, we have a cancer consortium group in Wyoming that were actively trying to do things to from the preventative side, and I was a member of that. There was a three-person commission, if you will, that I was joined and served on for years. And one of the things we did with that, including a fellow senator, Senator Scott, is to work on a colorectal program funded by the state of Wyoming to go out there and perform these colonoscopies on people that, for whatever reason, just don't do it because of, if you get a colonoscopy and you catch it early, not only do you save a life, but the expense of it and all the positive things. So we worked on that, and now Wyoming has that program. And it's a good program, it's worked, and it saved lives, and it's cost-effective as well. So involved in that, continue to be involved in those kind of things, Race for the Cure, doing things there to help raise money and all that. And then more recently, the opioid issue, and of course, that's driven by, between my first cancer and my second cancer, having to deal with all of those. And the you always say that the cure is worse than the disease sometimes. Mm-hmm. And having to deal with to be able to get off that medication and deal with that and knowing about it and understanding it, and then having personal relationships with other people with opioids and the devastation and what happens in the loss of life. So being a Senate president, I attended a Senate President's Forum mm-hmm. in Idaho early this year, and there were a lot of fellow Senate presidents from around the country. And one of our topics was opioids, and I listened and I said, Wyoming's doing a lot of things right, but we need to be sure we're doing the best we can. And so I put together some legislation, sponsored a bill, have an opioid task force. I'm the chairman of it, and we've already had one meeting, and we're moving Wyoming ahead to do all we can in a prospective manner, being proactive to take this on directly and do what we can to help what I consider to be a crisis in our nationwide.
So what's next for you? Are you staying in government? Do you have more treatment ahead or just follow-up visits? What are some of the next steps?
Well, because of what I've gone through and certainly at this stage of my life, I'm not going to have any more political aspirations. To run for governor this fall was not an option. Mm-hmm. To do that again, to get in actively involved in a national political elected official or position, I'm just not going to do that. I've been in public service for well over 25 years, and it's time to do more other things in other parts and challenges in my life. And one of them, I think, is to be more actively involved in getting my story about cancer and what you do and how you do and how you deal with it and mm-hmm. and the family issues and how important it is with a supporting wife and family. I think it's tougher on the wife than it is on the husband or the spouse that has the cancer versus the one that doesn't. And my wife, Lorraine, was such a trooper, and my whole family, my brother, my sister, mother, kids, all of the above. And it's the same for all families to be more actively involved and help there where the personal experiences I've gone through might help somebody and convince them to have a colonoscopy or an endo or something that might be preventative, and to be more active there and sort of phase out of the public service in terms of being an elected official and do things from the sideline, or continue to be a businessman, a father, a grandfather, and all that, but help where I can. I still have that strong feeling of being a public servant and doing what I can wherever the Lord calls me to go.
Great. So my final question is that, what advice would you give to someone who is now in the position that you were in years ago, first time hearing the words, you have cancer?
I think the first thing you do is after you recover from the shock is you need to look at what you can do to take it on heads up and be able to look at all the options to ultimately have, not just to have it, to be a manageable disease, but have a cure to look at all the options. So be a smart person and look at them. But the most important thing is to have faith and to believe in what you're doing and to listen to your spouses and listen to your doctors. Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid to ask questions, understand the disease, know what the options are rather than totally relying on your doctor. Just be very knowledgeable about it. Take it on heads up. And what I say is every day is a good day. Some are just better than others. And have that good attitude and go out there and give it your all.
Okay, perfect.
As a public official, you know, you weigh the pros and cons. If your disease is at the point where the treatments don't allow you to perform at the level that's expected of you, then consider slowing down for a little bit. But ultimately, I think you come back a better, stronger leader having gone through that. And I think that adds character, builds stamina in the sense of being able to hang in there and fight the good fight and do the best you can given the talents you have or don't have.
Tune in next week when we speak with author and avid patient advocate Shannon Pulaski. We'll hear about the launch of her new resource called Proactive Genes, an initiative designed to empower children to learn their family's health history, and chat about her new book, Mom's Genes, written to help start these conversations.
The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine.